Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is a busy, busy week around here, not just Kentucky Derby week for those of us who love the ponies. And you'll hear some horse racing conversation about the past, present, and future of the Preakness. We did that up at Greenmount Bowl and Greenmount Station last week with our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. We'll give those away in 2 weeks at Fadley's. We were at Fadley's on Friday as well, chatting with Tharu Vignaraja. Also talking about all of last week's dramas like Jackson Holiday going down. We got bigger problems with the Yankees in town this week. But certainly all eyes in the sports world were really on Detroit, where massive crowds. My dude Mike Rosenfeld, our chief digital officer, was amongst them. So I'm looking forward to a little bit of feedback on that. But for the seriousness of all of it, Luke was torn between baseball, football, football, baseball, draft, baseball, bullpen, baseball, football. But Eric DaCosta was pretty focused over the weekend. The Ravens were focused, and I think we could scratch our heads about parts of it. Other parts sort of fell into what we predicted. And after 3 months of doing all this predicting from Mobile, Alabama, through combines and pro days and rumors and needs and free agency, they have a draft class, Luke Jones, do they not?
They have a draft class, and I think it's highly regarded overall, which is typically the case with the Ravens. I think you go back and find even some draft classes that weren't so good a couple years later. Typically, the initial reaction is because the Ravens have this reputation that people feel good about it. So 9-man draft class, I think you look at it in terms of value as it pertains to what the consensus rankings were out there. When you talk about all the different pundits, and there are people that actually collect data based on all the rankings and all the mock drafts and all of that, I think you look at it through that lens, the Ravens appeared to get good value. And I think they addressed most of their needs. I suspect we're going to continue to talk a lot about the offensive line, which, by the way, was probably always going to be the case anyway when you're picking 30th and not 5th. I think you look at this draft overall, 9 picks. What wasn't as though they had a ton of picks early, but they did have the 2 fourth round picks. They picked 2 players in the 7th round for the first time in over a decade. Imagine that. So
quarterback, a late quarterback too, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, there's always some level of intrigue when you draft a quarterback. It's not quite the same when you have an MVP at quarterback who you know is not going anywhere anytime soon. But they did do that, and I think there are certainly some interesting names that we will be talking about, we will be monitoring. And I think while you look at the top of this draft list, Nate Wiggins, as you and I already talked about, he's going to play. Is he going to start week one in the base defense? Probably not, but he's going to be involved. I think for me, though, the most pivotal pick is probably going to be their second round pick, Roger Rosengarten out of Washington. I said it going into this draft, and I'll still say it, even though I'm uneasy saying it about a late second round pick. I felt they needed to come away with one plug and play starter on their offensive line. And Rosengarten's the only candidate for that. It's certainly not the 7th round center, right? So, because Tyler Linderbaum, they have. I mean, that's the one spot you feel great about. So to me, Rosengarten is, he's going to be the key to the short-term success of this draft. But obviously, over the long haul, we'll see how many of these 9 players truly become factors. A few of them maybe become starters. That's really the gauge on how you evaluate a draft. But we're not going to know that for a couple more years. So in the meantime, we go off of what the pre-draft profile and perception was. And in that light, I think most would say the Ravens did a pretty good job in terms of maximizing the value of their picks.
Well, we could sit here and nitpick this, and they put them all on the lounge now, and I don't go out and eat ice cream with the scouts. We will not be at Costas Inn tonight, even though I'm wearing my Costas Inn shirt, having a draft recap the way we used to do this. I would say the biggest story that you and I should be talking about in the beginning isn't who they took in the fourth round or who projects out to be the backup quarterback. It's more the offensive line and what wasn't done and what wasn't addressed after all of our oxygen. And to your point, this young man they've drafted, that right tackle, we'll see. But we've come a long way from the veteran offensive line and the neophyte quarterback. So now the quarterback's making $50 million and it's a two-time MVP, but let's go do that with players younger than him on the offensive line, theoretically. Theoretically, all of them, I guess, other than Ronnie Stanley, would be less accomplished than he is. This is it's a transition time for them, and I'm not going to begrudge them not signing Zeitler or Moses or whatever they could have done to veteranify the offensive line. And they still might go out and wind up with somebody else's cap casualty. I don't know, right? That there's still two more opportunities for that in training camp as well, for other organizations to throw a Kevin Zeitler out the side door for them. And then would there be cap issues and all of that? But this was their, you know, sort of opportunity to address that. They did in the way that they did, which leads a lot of people to think, well, maybe they like Voorhees. Maybe they like Cleveland more than, let's say, Luke and Nestor do.
Yeah, well, and it's TBD, right? I mean, everyone loves their picks. Everyone loves their young guys on their roster until they have to play. And then you either continue to love them or you say, oh, this guy can't do the job. I mean, that's just the nature of this. I mean, as I was getting ready to hop on the Zoom to talk to you, I was reminded of the quote that Eric DaCosta, it's right in their draft guide for 2024. The draft is the lifeblood of this organization. We take it very seriously. We try to make it a science. We really do. But in the end, it's probably more of an art than a science. And I think that epitomizes the draft so well, because you can evaluate, you can collect as much data as you want. You can have the scouts go and meet with the player, talk to his family, talk to his friends, talk to his coaches, talk to his high school coaches, all of that. And you're still working off of, you know, as complete a picture as you try to make it, but not a complete picture in terms of the human element, and not a complete picture in terms of, okay, what a player does in college does not automatically translate to the next level. And that's not a Raven thing. That's all 32 teams. The Ravens have navigated that challenge far better than most teams in the NFL for the last quarter century. It's why they've been as successful as they've been, but there's still a lot of unknowns. So again, bringing it back to specifically the offensive line, it was always going to be very challenging, even if there was a guy at 30. And we talked about this after they picked Nate Wiggins, that the board was pretty much picked clean in terms of guys that really were appropriate options at number 30, based on the consensus, right? We know that there's a chance that some team just drafted a Hall of Fame guard in the third round that the Ravens could have picked, right? The other 31 teams could have picked. We just know that that's how it works. So you know, you can't view it through that lens. You're just viewing it through the lens of how all these players are perceived today. And it was always going to be challenging at 30, let alone if there was no one there at 30. And then you're talking about picking a Rosengarten at 62. Now, I think that was good value. I think he has as good a chance as you can really view anyone as a late second round pick having a chance to start. That doesn't mean that I'm writing his name in pen as the starting right tackle, because I think we need to see, right? I think when you look at how he profiled at Washington, I do think he profiles well for what Todd Monken and the Ravens want in their offense now, which more athletic offensive linemen, probably less of a focus on physicality and more on footwork and athleticism, more blocking, and wanting to have five-man protections and not having to keep, you know, Patrick Ricard as a six-man in protection. That way you can have another guy out and around. That's what they're looking for. Now, does that mean they're going to have that hammered down perfectly come week one or even week nine? That's the big question, because you're talking about a lot of new parts with this. And to your point, and I agree with you, I think there's still a good chance that there's a veteran that out there that will be on this offensive line who's not on the roster right now. I still, if I had to bet a dollar on that one way or the other, I would bet yes on that right now, just based on where they are. But your point is well taken. And I think where the Ravens stand right now, they say, you know what? Short of it being a first round guy, which we've already been over that, we think, we suspect anyone we could have drafted in, say, the third round, fourth round, fifth round, at least for right now, probably wasn't going to be better than Ben Cleveland or Andrew Voorhees or the guy they just brought in from Houston who's got some versatility, Josh Jones, you know, who you know, is kind of like this year's John Simpson, for lack of a better description.
Well, that wouldn't be poor if that worked out that way.
Yeah,
if they
can
find two John Simpsons to play here, they're probably in better shape than maybe they even would have been paying a Zeitler and a Moses to think they're going to be banged up or injured, or we're getting to that point where we're aging out of these guys. And to your point, you know, there were a lot of guys drafted into Greg Roman and brought through Greg Roman, and this quickly became Todd Monken. That change of personnel and age and energy, in addition to now having a big fat back that I have always sort of worshipped and wanted around here. That was before he had his Houston Oilers jersey as well. But this is a different thing. Zay Flowers makes things different, I think, in their passing game, certainly different than Odell Beckham did last year. So, you know, they're transitioning and they're picking the guys they want. I mean, to your point, my point, like, they've been doing this since the beginning of time, and they at least go into this with some really clear and concise vision of what they're trying to do when they draft a kid from Washington. And I don't always say proclaim him the starter, but sort of open the door to the 62nd pick for that.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of hope and you kind of say he better be the starter because, and that's putting a lot of pressure on the kid. Let's be clear. I think Rosengarten's a good pick. Does that mean I think he's going to be ready to start week one or week eight? We're going to have to see, because again, that's typically when you look, especially how offensive line play has changed as dramatically as it has in the NFL. Yes, there are always exceptions to the rule, but you get beyond the first 15 or 20 picks, it's really ambitious to take a lineman after the top 15 or 20 and think that they're going to play right away. Now, that doesn't mean you won't find a guy that, I mean, it's not like Marshall Yanda was Marshall Yanda right away. Now he had injuries but the point is it takes guys time to develop. And, you know, that's where you look at this and say, how quickly can Rosengarten develop? So, you know, of all their moves, let me be clear. And we've mentioned John Simpson. I'm not concerned about replacing John Simpson. John Simpson, if we're calling it what it was, he was a below average starter at left guard. I mean, he was fine. He was serviceable. He posted up every week, and that's important. But you weren't getting Pro Bowl caliber play or even above average play from him. So I think that position in isolation, I'm not as concerned about that. However, Kevin Zeitler is a Pro Bowl caliber right guard and finally got a Pro Bowl recognition. I get it. He's older. I get it. You didn't necessarily want to make a long-term commitment there or even a one-year commitment, which is what he ended up getting from Detroit. I mean, maybe that wouldn't have been on the table for the Ravens. Maybe there were some hurt feelings there. Who knows? In the case of Morgan Moses, that to me right now, of all the moves, that right now is the one where I take pause a little bit and say, you're now looking at either a second-round rookie or Daniel Faalele, who I don't think physically fits what they want to do. He's more of the mauling Greg Roman, big, physical, tough right tackle. I don't know if he has the feet to do what the Ravens want to do with their O-line at this point. Or Patrick McCary, who I love as my sixth offensive lineman who can play all five spots in a pinch if someone goes down. I don't love Patrick McCary being penciled in as the starter. So that's the one, because keep in mind, Moses was under contract. They traded him. He didn't leave as a free agent. They traded him. That's the one move right now where I look at this and I see how free agency and I see how the draft played out, where I say, maybe they got a little too cute there. Maybe they should have held on to him. They still could have drafted Rosengarten. And guess what? If Rosengarten looked great during the preseason and looked like he was their best option, you probably could have traded Morgan Moses and probably gotten similar compensation, because it's not as though they got this huge haul for him. That was basically a trade to be made that you're either going to trade him or you're probably going to release him, right? So, you know, that's the one move of all the guys they let go on the O-line where I say, you know, it probably wouldn't be bad to have him on the roster still. You know, he'd be your right tackle. Even if Rosengarten's ready to take over in week seven, then great, great. That's not a big problem there. Moses was making $5.5 million. In this day and age with where the salary cap is, that's not extraordinary money for a starting offensive lineman. I mean, it just isn't. We're not talking about $20 million like Ronnie Stanley was carrying before they did the pay cut. So, you know, that's the one move that for me, I'm looking at and saying, I hope that's not the move that ends up biting them a little bit. And maybe Rosengarten will be fine. Maybe he's going to be ready week one. Maybe he's going to be a really solid, rock solid, capable starter as a rookie, which kudos to him if he is. And I still think he's going to be a good player in the big picture sense. But, you know, that's the one move right now. And, you know, we'll see how this plays out. You know, to your point, there could be some offensive linemen, probably not necessarily now, because the post-June 1st thing isn't quite as dramatic as it used to be, because you can, you know, like Odell Beckham was a post-June 1st release, you know, so they didn't have to wait to June 1st. You just designate them as that. So, you know, maybe not now, but maybe during training camp, maybe like when they signed Jadeveon Clowney, maybe some offensive lineman gets cut, or maybe there's a trade to be made there where you swap late round picks or something like that, and you can bring someone in. So not panicking over this, but I'd be disingenuous if I said that I looked at the state of the offensive line right now and I had a high degree of confidence with where it is, but we're going to see how it plays out.
Well, I think that's the point, though. You spend a couple of months waiting on the O-line to improve, and then you wake up Monday and you're like, okay, they did something. And it was always, they weren't going to draft three or four. They weren't going to solve the offensive line this weekend. They were going to add to it. But I think that we've talked, there was so much oxygen for it. And this is part and parcel of being a team that's expected to win 15 games next year, right? And the house burning down when they didn't run the football, you know, which is now 12 weeks ago. It starts to get to be ancient history, but they can't do anything and they can't play for four more months. So this is what we talk about, but we do have a hard time envisioning how this offensive line is going to be a Super Bowl offensive line, right? I'm having a hard time going through that right now to say, love the running back, quarterback, got some offensive weapons. Mark Andrews coming back, that'll make things better. But I'm not looking at this and saying Tyler Linderbaum's going to be like the greatest center in the game. He might be, but that, I don't know that that matters so much as to what else goes on there. And I'm not a believer in Ronnie Stanley. And the rest of it, I don't know how I can be a believer in any of it. I haven't seen any of it, right? So showing me and being from Missouri, as I am, or Dundalk in this case, I don't know. It's going to be a question mark right on up until they go out and, you know, smash some people in the mouth and put 380 yards up in opening week and, you know, steamroll a team in 2.5 hours and win a game 35-7 or something, right? Like that's what it's going to take, because the question marks we've had the last 3 months in the offensive line, from the minute they decided Zeitler, Moses, we're not going there, but we're keeping Stanley because we kind of have to. I give them a very, very incomplete grade on that.
Yeah, and look, I think that's fair. I think you even look at recent history, look at post-2019. What did they do to replace Marshall Yanda? Kevin Zeitler was the following year. The point I'm making is they didn't really do enough, and that did hurt them in 2020. Following year, Ronnie Stanley coming off of the major injury. What did they do to account for Stanley's backup plan? They signed Alejandro Villanueva, who, let's call a spade, he stunk. That was not a good backup plan. So there is some recent history of needing to make another move on the O-line and not doing it, and then it ended up costing them. Let's be clear. They still made it to the divisional round in 2020. They were in position to be a playoff team until Lamar Jackson got hurt in 2021. So we are not talking about this in terms of this jeopardizing them being a contender, this jeopardizing them having a chance to win the AFC North. We're not talking about that, but we're talking through the lens of Super Bowl and winning a championship, because that's all that matters for this team at this point. You know, regular season success and just getting there, yes, that has to happen, but It's all about January. That's why, you know, we've talked about Derrick Henry. That's all about what he does in January. He can run for 1,400 yards, and if he's a non-factor in the divisional round or the AFC championship, then that move was kind of whatever then, right? I mean, that's where we are right now. That's the reality for a team that has been a number one seed and had home field and not gotten the job done. So, yeah, when you look at this thing right now, and fully acknowledging they're more than 4 months away from playing a game that matters. And they're even longer than that away from the games that are really, really going to matter. But yeah, it's fair to ask that right now. It's fair to ask if it's going to be enough. Cause you hit the nail on the head. We're talking about this in terms of Ronnie Stanley being one of their surest things. I mean, let that marinate for a moment. Ronnie Stanley being one of their surest things. You have Linderbaum's one, and right now Stanley's the second. And we know that that has been anything but a sure thing over the last 4 years, through no fault of his own because of the original injury. But Stanley is so pivotal to this because let's say they figure it out at guard, right? Let's say that Andrew Voorhees can be the left guard, and let's say that Ben Cleveland is a perfectly capable, solid, maybe not as good as Kevin Zeitler, but let's say close. So let's say those two positions are okay. Let's say Rosengarten is ready and does a solid job as the right tackle. If Ronnie Stanley isn't healthy and isn't right and isn't playing at a higher level than he did last year, okay, you can do the rotation with McCary again. Is that still going to add up to the kind of offensive line that you feel confident getting you to all the way to a Super Bowl, keeping Lamar Jackson upright and healthy for 17 games? We'll see. Right now, I would say I'm uneasy, and I think you said it perfectly. I don't think that a letter grade is warranted right now. I think it's still very much an incomplete. I think the letter grade will present itself, I think, very quickly once the season starts. But right now, it still feels like they're counting on a lot of projecting to go well here. And they're very short on known commodities other than Tyler Linderbaum, who, look, is one of the best three or four centers in football, right? That they feel great about him, and they should. But beyond that, boy, I mean, there's a lot of unknown here. And I'll bet right now that a couple of those unknowns will go right. But we're talking about three or four unknowns that need to fall the right way. God, that's very ambitious. And that's why I still, give me the dollar to bet for or against adding another veteran that starts, or at least is a really serious competitor to start on the O-line. And I'm going to guess we're going to see that at some point in time between now and, say, the end of August, that you're going to see someone else added in there that, you know, whether it's a guard, whether it's another tackle, you know, whatever it might be, because it's a lot of leaning on young guys. And let's face it, we're not talking about first and second round pick type young guys, you know, Rosengarten being the exception, you know, Ben Cleveland, third round pick, but that was 3 years ago. Voorhees, you know, it's not like he was going to be a first round pick before he tore his ACL. Big Sala, you know, go down the list. These were later round guys that we're talking about here. So we'll see. Again, we'll see. And that they've earned the benefit of the doubt, especially after some of the late summer moves they made last year. And even in Van Noy's case, in the late September when they made that move. But right now, it is tough to look at this offensive line and sit here and just say, oh, they're going to be fine. I think if you're that dismissive about the concern on the O-line, or at least the questions on the O-line, you're probably looking at it through a very dark tin of purple in the glasses as you're looking at the roster.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. We're going to continue with baseball and football conversation, a melodious mix as to whether we're going to fix the bullpen or fix the offensive line first. I know one thing, the New York Yankees are in town this week. We got some fixing we need to do on that. We're going to recap the draft. We're going to have it all out at Baltimore Positive. If you were at Fadley's on Friday, you got the Pac-Man scratch-offs. We also had Tharu Vignaraja, as well as Alicia and Damie came on. And told me I'm now the master of, they've retired me. I'm no longer eligible to be in the crab races with BJ Suroff, who brings Ringer crabs every year. We talked about this, Ringer female crabs. So I've decided to MC it this year. Feel like my mouth is going to be fresh or anything, and MCing it. It's the 16th. It's 2 weeks out. Come on down to Faithley's. Come see us. Baseball, every baseball game on Friday, we're going to be down there from 2 until 5, giving away Maryland Lottery scratch-offs. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, making my water clean. Very appreciative of Doug and the group doing that. Also, Jiffy Lube Multi-Care. If you have not checked out our 25th anniversary documentary video, No One Listens, Everyone Hears, please do. Go check it out. It's entertaining, to say the least. And if you've contributed in any way, been on our road trips, involved in our sponsors, ever said hello somewhere around town, you'll be heartened by how it all sort of came together and this weird thing happened the last 32 years here. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore positive. Stay with us.